Welcome to the second season of Alternative Parenting Podcast, where we learn how to guide our kids to find their own path while supporting them in cultivating traits that will empower them to live a life of fulfillment, meaning, and satisfaction. I'm your host, Efrat Amira. Welcome back. The first episode of this podcast is called Why Connection is Our Best Resource in Parenting. The reason for that is that I truly believe that more than anything, our most essential role as parents is to create a resilient relationship with our kids. If our kids grow up to have a secure attachment with us, they will flourish in every aspect in their life. I want to invite you to my next online workshop, Forming an Unbreakable Bond with Our Kids, to learn how we can nurture that secure attachment and understand what may be stopping us from doing so. It will be a very powerful workshop where you will not only learn the steps to creating this strong relationship, but also how you can overcome what may be stopping you from showing up fully for your kids. For more information, go to alternative-parenting.ck.page/bond. I will also add that link to the show notes. Today I have for you an interview with Ben Ashfield. Ben is an award-winning creative director in advertising and marketing for over 15 years. He has developed effective campaigns for top healthcare and CPG clients, including Merck, AstraZeneca, Insitia, Purina, IHOP, Educational Testing Services, Svedka Vodka, and Capital One. Helping other companies succeed inspired Ben to dream of starting his own company. When his children reached school age and he couldn't find a good place for them, he realized that there was a huge unmet need in education. That's when Ben co-founded the Village Electric, an innovative learning center in Mountainside, New Jersey, with his wife, Tammy. Ben and Tammy's most important qualification for guiding a new approach to education comes from being parents of three children, ages 19, 8, and 6, and having had the opportunity and patience to carefully observe how they learn and develop. Ben currently fulfills the role of executive director at the center. The Village Electric mission is to protect and nourish every child's genius. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to give children the education they deserve. They offer summer camp, mixed-age learning studios, full-time programs for teens, and afternoon enrichments and Forest Fridays. In this conversation, we discuss the importance of individualized progression, nurturing each child's curiosity and genius. We conversed about the question of the balance between structure and freedom and the value of social-emotional development over age-based grouping. We dive into the core principles that shape alternative education in the Village Electric. This conversation really gave me hope for the future of education. Learning that there are other alternatives out there for our kids is really encouraging. If you are not satisfied with your kids' education, this episode is for you. And now, on to the conversation. Hello, everyone. I have today Ben Ashfield with us, who is the co-founder of the Electric Village School, together with his wife, Tammy. I first came to know about the Village Electric last year when I was looking for a school for my son, because after 5 years of homeschooling, I decided that I want some kind of program for him. And I found the Village Electric, which was really aligned with what I felt that in a school should be. So I signed him up, and it was actually a very big commitment for me and my family because it's 40 minutes away from my house, and I knew that it's going to be a little bit challenging for us to get there. So we signed him up for 2 days a week, which was nice that we had that option there in the school. But again, it was a big sacrifice that we were willing to take because we felt that this school can be worth it. Eventually, we didn't send our son there because we found a closer alternative that just opened this year, the Awakened Village Collaborative, which I talked about a little bit in this podcast before. And Ben was generous enough to refund us all the money that we put into when we signed him up. So I'm so excited to have Ben here because I really wanted to dive in more and learn more about this school and how the idea of it came up and learn more about Ben and his wife and their own parenting journey. So welcome, Ben. I'm really excited to have you here and have this conversation finally with you. So start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you became the co-founder of the Village Electric.
Yes. And first of all, thanks so much for having me on your podcast. It's such an honor to be able to speak with you and also to have a chance to tell our story and hopefully connect with some more people who might be interested in what we're doing. My wife and I, Tammy, don't have a background in education. I worked in advertising, and my wife, Tammy, has been a fashion designer, a jewelry designer, and we live in South Orange, New Jersey. And I happen to have three kids. My son is 19, my oldest son. And then I have a daughter who's now 8 and another son who's 6. So I think an important part of our journey and our story is having, you know, what I like to call poor family planning, or this big age gap between my oldest son and my daughter. Because we had a chance to see the full journey with one of our kids, you know, with our oldest. He's now in college. He's 19. He goes to UCSB in California, and he studies electrical engineering. So I think that having gone through that with him, he went to a lot of different schools when he was little, and he ended up at Newark Academy from sixth grade through high school. But that was eye-opening for us to know what we wanted and didn't want for our younger kids. And we just weren't seeing what we wanted in South Orange and Maplewood, the public schools in our town. And I think that we were more stubborn, you know, about like, no, that's not right. We don't. And we thought a little bit about, you know, can we try to change the system? Can we join the school board? Can we sort of make change from within? And we ultimately decided that we felt like, you know, necessarily trying to change a system that didn't really want to change was not going to be very productive. And while it seemed kind of hard, that what we really like to do is start something of our own. From a parent's perspective, you know, like what do we all as parents really want for our children? Because we feel like our local school had kind of lost sight of what the children need and what do they want and how do they learn and how do they naturally grow and develop? And that actually sort of almost starting again, and building something from the ground up was the way to really do that and have all of our focus be on the kids.
Wow, that's incredible. I have so many questions. Okay. So first of all, what wasn't right in the regular school for you? And what was the inspiration to open a different type of school? Like, did you see something else that you did like that inspired you?
I mean, we were obviously inspired by homeschool and the homeschool approach. But we personally felt like not homeschoolers, that, you know, I had a full-time job, and we also felt like there is the social aspect of kids being kids, kids being together in a kid world that we also wanted for them. But we did think about that, and I think that's sort of when you're sort of unhappy with the options that you see out there, that's kind of like your first reactions. Well, we're just going to do it ourselves at home. But I think what really sort of struck me is, how can we help each other as parents? You know, mm-hmm. How can we work together? How can we share our resources? If we're all after kind of the same thing. And so that's what got us thinking about combining the best of homeschool with the best of in-person school. Like, why can't that exist? And can we bring those two things together, you know? And when I think of homeschool, the best of homeschool, to me, it's self-directed learning. It's learning at each child's own pace. It's incorporating their interests into what they learn and giving them some agency over what, when, wow, how, where, and why they're learning in an age-appropriate way. Obviously, like as they're younger, it's a little less of that. And as they get older, that's more important. But and kids thrive in that environment, you know? I mean, homeschool kids are creative and smart and accomplished, and you know, we see them go on to do amazing things at young ages sometimes even. But then the other thing that struck us is that, you know, our just observing our own children is they just love to be together. You know, they love to be with other kids. If given a choice, that's what they want to do. They want to be with other kids rolling around on the outside, or you know, and so we wanted to create, we didn't want to compromise on the education, but we also wanted to create a place where it's a kid's world for them. And all the benefits that come from that. I mean, we know about the benefit of play, you know, and having that open-ended and unstructured time where that's so valuable for them. Those kinds of things. Can we create a ready-made environment where that stuff is there? That's the draw of like your local schools. It's all set up. It's all there. Like the kids are there, the buses are there. It's all set up, and it's easy to just kind of walk into that. And when you're sort of get off that track, then all of a sudden it's like, wow, how do I approach this? What do I do? How do I get started? How do I structure my life? Like, you know, how do I line up all the things that I need? And we saw each individual family kind of going through that one at a time. And we thought, well, why can't we make that easier?
I really relate to what you said. Because I feel like when we homeschooled our kids, it was very self-directed, and we incorporated their interests, and we went in their specific pace. But what was missing for me was the social part. I mean, we did see friends, we had like social gatherings, we did do different activities. But what was missing for me that is seeing the same kids a few times a week, so they can create those friendships.
Right.
That was what was missing for me. And also I felt like if we're only homeschooling like families separately, then we're not really committed to each other. So there was one summer, for example, that I felt we had a lot of homeschooling friends already. And we had, you know, we can invite people to our house, we can go with people to other places. But somehow most of our week we were by ourselves because people were busy and had other plans. Right. And it felt really, really lonely. That was what really kind of pushed me to find a community. And I really resonate with what you say. With, you know, we are a few families together that are looking for the same thing. And we know that putting our kids together in the same space is going to benefit them tremendously. So why don't we do it as a community together?
Right.
So when you started the school, were you a couple of families, or was it just you and your wife and kind of like finding more people that to join you in your journey?
Well, we had a few things fall in place for us that allowed us to do this, you know, and we almost kind of couldn't say no to it because just one thing led to another. One of the things was, so in the building that we are in, it's the school building behind the Our Lady of Lourdes Church in Mountainside. And there actually was an Acton Academy in this building before us. And then the director of the Acton Academy was focused on her Morristown location and decided to close the Mountainside location. So already there were some families that were here that were looking for what's next for them.
Mm-hmm.
And also the space became available. So, and my old, my 8-year-old daughter was in the Acton here mm-hmm. for a few months before the end of the year, before the year ended. So we were sort of, we had just kind of gotten into this community, and then this sort of big change happened, and we all sort of got together and said, what should we do about this? And my wife and I, you know, kind of either drew the short straw or were the ones, you know, kind of naive enough to say, hey, we're gonna do something. We're gonna take mm-hmm. the reins here. And we did. And we just felt like it was something that we had in the back of our mind, like, gee, wouldn't it be great if we could do something like this? But when you're at that stage, you just don't even know how to start, right? Mm. It's just like the very idea of starting is impossible almost. But we had a few kind of kicks in the butt or sort of momentum that got us going enough. And then we felt like we couldn't turn the opportunity down, and we tried to keep the community together. Now it's evolved over the past 3 years, you know, as the pandemic has ended and people's lives have sort of changed again and stuff like that. And there has been definitely, it's an ongoing process, but that definitely helped us get started.
Wow, that's incredible, because I feel like what you're saying right now is a story that I'm hearing over and over again. When people are kind of afraid to step out of the system, but once they do, the universe is just sets up the things, you know, just practical things for you to be successful on your journey, because there is something about it that is right. Like you're yes. doing the right thing. So things are working out for you. So I'm very, I don't know, it just made me so excited when you said that you almost couldn't say no to it, right? Yes. It was like, I'm giving you this as a gift. The universe is giving you this as a gift, and you do it with it whatever you like. So tell me about the beginning, how it all started and how you navigated the whole beginning of it.
Well, it's funny that you say the part about not saying no, because that is something that my wife and I have remarked back and forth to one another throughout the past 3 years. It's just... it's almost like, in a way, we are just following mm-hmm. the process, you know, mm-hmm. it's that we're just kind of willing participants or something. So there is an element of that, of like when, I think when you're on the right track, there is a sense of it's going and you're kind of just along for the ride almost, if that makes sense. So how we started, we had been in a pod during the pandemic that was in the basement of my house, actually. So that was our first experience with, and we didn't set it up or anything. We were just members of it. We saw that you can get a group of people together and you can hire a teacher and you can, you know, agree on the type of education that you want to have, and that it's not that complicated on that level. So that was really the basis for how we started. We thought, you know, we have a group, we have a space, we're going to hire some educators, and we're going to, you know, and we have this philosophy that, you know, comes from the homeschool kind of background or mindset of the type of education that we want to have. And, you know, in that way, we'll be able to create a place that's got all the things that traditional school is missing. You know, there's flexibility, there's the ability to come more or less days if you want. There's the ability to have the different ages mixed together. You know, we can help each child learn at their own pace and that sort of thing. And I think the root of the academic work for us was grounded in some homeschool curriculum. So we have chosen for the older kids, Saxon math, for their math curriculum, and ELA program based on Robinson curriculum for ELA. That was kind of the academic foundation of what we were doing. And then, you know, as I said, the social foundation was sort of there when we started.
Mm. So in your philosophy, how much is there a balance between, or what is the balance between structure and freedom for the kids in the school?
I think this is kind of an ongoing question. But I think it's also different for the different ages, right? Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest sort of guiding principles is just what's age appropriate for. Mm-hmm. So we start at 3 years old, and right now we go up through 11 years old. This year we want to add middle school. So we hope to be sort of pre-K through eighth grade by the fall. And I think that equation, the balance of that equation changes as they get older. I think at 14 years old, you're more capable of a lot more freedom. And your education is going to, at that age, look more like, we are your guides. We are, you know, helping you with executive functioning. We are helping you set goals for yourself, learning goals. What are the things you're interested in learning? How do we bring those together for you? How do we get the resources in place that you're going to need? But by that age, they're capable of taking more responsibility over when and how they work. Mm-hmm. At 3 years old, you know, not so much. So they need, there's a lot more teacher-led and a lot more structure at that age. I think overall, I would say, tried to strike a balance between like an environment like Sudbury Valley, which mm-hmm. is essentially, you know, we provide the space and the opportunity, and then the kids direct themselves. And a structured environment like a progressive school, like a project-based learning. We're really kind of blending those, I think. So we have our core skill for all of our studios. We have our core skills time in the morning. And then we have open-ended play time in the afternoon from 1 to 3. Mm. So they will be doing their core skills and learning with their guides in their classrooms in the morning. And then in the afternoon from 1 to 3, the whole school is free to be outside, to be in the different studios. We have a lot of enrichments and guidance and projects and adults around, but the kids are free to choose what it is that they want to do and how they spend their time.
Mm-hmm. That sounds incredible. Yeah, you mentioned Sudbury Valley School, which was the model that I was very interested in when looking for a school for my son, for my kids in general, just my son was older. And it's interesting because I always think about this question of the balance between the structure and the freedom, because when I started homeschooling, I really loved the unschooling approach and tried to do this with my family. But I feel like you're right? It has to be age appropriate. And for the little ones, it's more beneficial for them to have some kind of structure. And then inside the structure, they were more free to play with whatever they want, for example. Yes. But they still have some kind of boundaries, which give them the sense of safety.
Yes.
Right. And then when they grow up, they are more able to just manage their own time and make, you know, their own goals and make more decisions by themselves. So I think it's a very good balance between giving, you know, the hours that you have in more structure and more of that core learning, and then the afternoon it's more open-ended free time. So what does your age groups look like?
So we have our, we have a name for each of our studios. So Nurture Studio is our 3 to 5 year old classroom. So essentially preschool and kind of kindergarten. And then we have Grow Studio, which is 5 to 8 years old. And that is a Reggio Emilia based classroom. So still fairly teacher led, but they're learning through doing. They're learning through play. They're learning through cooking, through studying butterflies, different activities. They write books, and we do follow a Montessori-based reading program called Wasika Reading. And so, just like you said, it's like as the kids get older, they get a little bit more freedom, but we still are incorporating those principles into their day that we want to see them exhibiting when they're 14 years old. You know, they're making age-appropriate choices. They're involved in their own learning. They're learning at their own pace, even as they learn how to read. You know, in our Grow Studio, some of the kids read, some of the kids don't. But we're looking for how do we help each child progress for them to the next step. And within this classroom environment, how are we helping each child progress at their own rate? And then we have our Thrive Studio, which is our 8 to 11 year olds. And their day is broken up into some academic specific chunks. So they'll have a math block and an ELA block in the morning, where each child is working on their own math or their own ELA, of, you know, that's our curriculum, but they're at their own spot in it. And then we have some group learning time for an hour after that, where we have we teach choreography, we have a choir teacher come in, we have a poetry teacher come in, we have a mock debate teacher come in, and we have one of our parents is an actor, and he teaches filmmaking on one of the days. So they have a mix of their independent learning for math and ELA, and then a chance to kind of learn together on based, you know, doing projects as a group. And then they have their free time from 1 to 3. So those are our three groups right now. We want to start, as I said, this year we're piloting our launch studio, which is going to be 11 to 14 year olds. There is some overlap in ages between the four studios because, you know, we're looking for social emotional development, really, like especially in that transition between Grow Studio 5 to 8 years old and Thrive Studio 7 or 8 to 11 years old. Kids are going to be ready for a more academic environment at a different rate, at different ages. And we're really looking for, are they interested in and capable of sort of sitting down and working on some math? Or are they not ready for that yet? And we feel like it's more beneficial to give them time if they're not ready than to sort of push them into academics too quickly.
Yeah. I like that you said that you're looking at their social emotional development and not only at their age, right? Because an age is just a number. Who says that a 5-year-old is going to be ready to go to the Grow Studio, or maybe a 4-year-old is actually going to be ready for it, and more than a 5-year-old, and, you know, same between the other studios. And I think it's a good question how much we wait until they're ready, or how do we know when they're really ready? And how much do we kind of, like, I don't want to say push, but encourage them into the next step?
Yes. I think that that is going to be different for each child. And the way that we handle that is really getting to know each kid. And it's thinking about what does this child need in order to progress to the next step? Because sometimes you need a push. And sometimes you need the ability to do whatever it is you want to do for a little while until that natural curiosity and desire to learn kind of reignites, you know? So what I think we pride ourselves on is really getting to know each child and our mission is, how do we protect and nourish each child's genius? And I think that comes from, in large part, knowing each kid and feeling on a social, emotional level, what do they need? What's going to help them progress to the next step? So one of the important things that I think the homeschool approach realizes is that learning is already built in. You know, it's already innate. It's already hardwired. Like, kids want to do it. They want to understand and explore their world. They want to grow and develop. They want to do what adults do. That we don't have to provide. It's already there.
Yeah.
But some of the things we do have to look for is, when is that not showing? When is the curiosity squashed? When are they not interested? When are they, you know, and why, right? Is it not interesting what we're doing? Or is there some other reason? And, you know, that's what I think we're really attuned to here, and how we feel like we can best serve each child.
Can you give us like a concrete example or two of children who, you don't have to say names, of course, but children who progress rather quickly and children who kind of wanted to stay in the younger kids group for a while, and maybe what were the reasons for that, you think?
Well, I have, my daughter, I think, is a good example. Was not interested in reading when she was around 6 or 6.5 years old, wasn't reading at all. And this was something that, you know, I needed some experience with. So, you know, we would sit down to read something and I would be reading the book to her and I'd be like, what is this word? She's like, I don't know. I'd be like, well, it's T-H-E, it spells the. She'd be like, okay, the. I'd turn the page, be like, what's this word? She's like, I don't know. I'm like, well, it's T-H-E, it's the. It's the same word. We just looked at it. She's like, oh, I didn't know that. You know, it was just not clicking, right? It was like the letters grouped together to form words and stuff was just not on her radar, right? Then we saw, like, through her, you know, like, kind of exposure to some of these academic things and stuff, like, it started to click, right? Like, okay, letters form words, worm form sentences, that kind of thing. And you could see that change. Like, you could almost see it. It was almost like you could hear it click. You could hear it go, you know? And then all of a sudden, there's curiosity about those things, right? There's an interest in those things. What does that word say? How do I, you know, you looking at the remote, what does this button on the remote say? Like, there's all of a sudden, there's an awareness of all of these things. So, and we just kind of jumped on that, right? So she started to read, but was interested and curious in reading. And when we did testing, we do the MAPS testing twice a year. When we did her MAPS testing last spring, she tested at an 11th grade reading comprehension level. So within a year, she went from not reading to reading at an 11th grade reading comprehension level. And I think that has mostly to do with the fact that she was ready and interested in reading. That's what we're looking for, right? And I think you need to be kind of finding that, striking that sort of balance between the them being happy, excited, interested, but providing the structure, the opportunities, the academics, because we know that learning these things is what's going to fuel, like learning how to read, for example, fuels more and more intellectual pursuits and more creativity and more learning, right? So you want to be giving them those tools to do more and learn more, but you have to do it in a way where they're not losing the joy and the curiosity and the happiness around doing it. Because it's easy, and I have parents come to me and say, my kid doesn't like reading. You know, they don't want to do it. And I always wonder, well, how did they learn how to read and when?
Mm-hmm.
And how much of that was a factor in that maybe it was something they were made to do and now find no joy in it, you know? And I think that's a tragedy, because how much of our learning, not only during our school years, but after, as we become adults, how much of our learning is going to come from reading?
Right.
And if you don't, if you're always avoiding reading or don't like to read or not good at it, or, you know, that's going to hamper you as an adult in your life.
Yeah. I feel like there is so much fear in parents around this topic of reading and math and academics in general. And we kind of impose that fear on our children and, you know, make them just anxious about these type of things, when actually, if we don't put the pressure, it will come to them naturally, because they want to know, as you said, they want to learn how to be citizens in our society. They want to be beneficial members here, and they want to pursue their own goals. So it's an inner motivation. It's not an outer motivation for them.
Yeah. Or they want to be able to find their show on Netflix without asking you, right?
Exactly.
Well, they have to know how to read in order
Right. They want to be independent.
Yes, absolutely. Very much. Yes, that's true. It's hard being a parent. I mean, there's a lot that we're trying to do, and we're worried about them. We want them to succeed. We want them. And that's something that really motivated my wife and I. It's like, we feel like there's a lot of common ground here being a parent, that what we want for our kids is we want them to go out in the world and be happy and fulfilled in the life that they create for themselves, you know? And in order to do that, you know, they need to be in touch with who they are, right? They need to know what interests them, what excites them, and what they need to have the curiosity and the passion to pursue that and follow that. That's how they're going to make a successful, happy life for themselves. So we feel like we want to start encouraging that and enabling that, protecting that from the start. And that's how they will go out into the world and be start a company, or, you know, invent a new product, or, you know, look at something in a way that nobody's looked at it before, and therefore improve the world for all of us.
Yeah. And that's individual success, right? It's not a form of success or an idea of success that is imposed on us by the society or our community, but it's our inner success. What will make our life successful and fulfilling for ourselves? And that's very, very individual. That's very unique. And there is no one size fits all.
Right.
So how much do you feel like the families in the school are aligned with your ways of schooling? And do you have a lot of conflicts, or how much are the parents involved in general?
So we try to do a lot of stuff as a community. I think that parenting, so schooling and parenting are wrapped up together. I think that, so we're on this journey together, right? One of the distinctions that I'm trying to make is, like, I want to, my realm is the realm of academics and education, you know, and I'm not, and your realm is the realm of being the parent, you know. I think it's helpful to just kind of start there and agree on that, you know. I want to give you room to be a parent, right? I'm not trying, and I sometimes in the traditional schooling, you almost think the schools are kind of trying to take over some of those things, right? That's why we have flexible days of the week, for example. Like, it's important for families to spend time together and go on vacation, and there shouldn't be a penalty for missing school. There should, you know, if you want to be together on Fridays, then you should do that. You know, I mean, family is always going to be the most important thing to the kids. Academics are what I do, and I want to provide an environment for the kids to be kids and for the kids to learn and the kids to be together. But I think there's room within that for different opinions about things, different ideas about things, different backgrounds. I think that's a good thing, right? There's enough common ground here about, you know, around raising our kids that that we don't have to, and if we focus on that, that we can welcome people with a lot of different experiences in their life. And I think that we've done that here, you know, and I've heard parents say that to me, that they appreciate that about the Village Electric. I think that one thing that can be a source of conflict is that this is an alternative education, right? So if standards are if you're anxious about standards, or for example, standards are important to you, then this may not be the right place, because we are looking at each child's individual development. We want to see progress. We want to see growth. We want to see, but we aren't as concerned with, are they doing what every other third grader is doing, for example, you know? So that can be sometimes a learning curve. Also, I think when it makes sense to parents sort of the younger ages and having, you know, sort of, I would call it a freer environment when the kids are younger. But sometimes as they start to get older, they're like, well, what about, you know, all the things they got to learn as like a 10-year-old or an 11-year-old. And what do you mean you don't have a teacher up in the front of the room, like teaching everybody the same thing? Like, sometimes that can be a learning curve. It's not for people that come from a homeschool background or are, you know about Sudbury Valley or interested in kind of alternative approaches, but it can be for families who are like, I know the traditional environment is not working for my child. Like, I see that they're unhappy. I see that they don't want to go to school and it's torture for all of us, but I don't know what this is. Like, what is this guy telling me, you know? So, yeah. There can be a learning curve there, and I think it's a very individual decision, and I want to like respect that and acknowledge that it's a personal decision how you educate your kids.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, once parents start to understand that it's not about the standards, but as you say, we want to see progress and growth individually, and it doesn't matter what age they are, at what level they are in reading or math, then I feel like there's a lot of freedom in that. And yeah, there is, you can just like kind of take off all that anxiety and fear off of yourself, because once your child is developing in their own pace, and they're progressing, and they're showing curiosity, and they're happy, and they're learning, and they're thriving, that's what matters.
Yes.
Most of all.
Right.
For the long run. Yeah, but I can of course understand that, you know, that fear, because all right. of us have it inside of us in, you know, in one level or the other. And it's a lot of like letting go and kind of like de-schooling ourselves out of these beliefs that, you know, kids have to be in a certain level at a certain age, and kids have to know this and that, and it's important. And if they don't know that, they're not going to be successful in life, and all those ideas which are, you know, really keeping us back from just trusting our kids and their own pace and their own development and their own path.
Yes. And that's where, going back to my 19-year-old, having seen him go through the whole process and even applying for college.
Mm.
You know, he went to Newark Academy, which is a very rigorous school. And he did well. He does well in environments like that. That, like, I don't think my two younger kids, that would be the right environment for them. I don't, you know, they're still young. I can't say definitively, but he just, that stuff just kind of came easily to him. But I know even in that environment, he probably did a lot of stuff that he wasn't interested in.
Mm.
And that maybe is not going to serve him at all as he becomes an adult. Like, if as an engineer, how much of, it's good that he had exposure to different things, but how much time did he spend on things that were really not him, you know? So that was one sort of takeaway I had from that. And then the other thing is, when we were applying to colleges, and now it's different than when I was applying to colleges. I applied to 5 or 6 colleges, you know. Now you apply to, it's sort of commonly accepted that you don't really know what you're going to get into and what you're not going to get into, that it's mm-hmm. very hard to say. So kids apply to 15, 16 different colleges. And, you know, I remember there was like the safe schools you knew you're going to get into. Then there was the ones that, you know, maybe, maybe not. And then there was the stretch schools, right? Now the guidance counselors, we don't really know what's going to be safe or what isn't. So we're going to apply to a lot of stuff, right? And this is someone who went to a college prep high school and did very well and, you know, had the grades and the APs and the IB degree and all that stuff to show for it. What struck me too about even college admissions, even if you want to go to college, right, is that in doing these 15 or 16 applications, what the universally they were looking for is not, does he know all the stuff,
mm.
right? What they were looking for is, what story can he tell that no other prospective student can tell? What makes him unique,
mm.
you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, as a parent, I was like, well, you know, nobody told me that 4 years ago. So like, he didn't spend time being unique. He spent time doing AP chemistry and, like, you know, getting good grades. So, but you realize that that transcript that he has is not that unique, you know, that a lot of kids come out of school with that. So that's also what got me thinking about, you know, what's most important is that these kids get to be themselves, right? And that they know what it is that motivates them and excites them and they're passionate about, even when you're applying to colleges.
Yeah. You know, I hear that more and more, that colleges are not looking actually for those A+ students anymore, because they don't want the kids that just know how to grow inside of a system. They actually are looking for kids who know who they are, who are self-driven, who are self-motivated, who did something that is unique, as you say, in their time, in childhood. Yes. And when you think about it that way, then all the fears that parents have about college, we can let go of them, because actually, when we put less academic pressure and give them more a chance of being themselves, they have a better chance to get into a college that they want. And of course, just the question of, do they have to go to college or not, is right. something that we have to question, because
right.
maybe that's not going to give them the life that they're dreaming of, to go to a college or Ivy League university or whatever it is. So that's also something that we want to question.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know the answer to that question if, you know, they, what they were doing during their middle school and high school years was just succeeding at whatever was kind of put in front of them. Like, then you're just going to sort of go on to college as a default, because that's the thing to do, rather than you know, what people that come from the homeschool background, you know, that some, they might go to community college at 15 or 16 years old, or they're having jobs or having internships, they're starting businesses, they're doing all kinds of things. It's going to be much easier to pick a college and go to college or know if that's what you want to do when you know what you want to get out of it, rather than, well, you know, when I finished high school, I was like, well, I guess I should go to college now because that's what everybody does. You know, I didn't really have a particular strong motivating factor, you know, like it just, that was what you did. So that's what I did.
Yeah. And I feel like it's that this is the time in their life that they have the opportunity to just pursue different interests and pursue different passions and just then find the thing that they really want to commit to and commit to it, whether it's building a business, going to college, going to an internship, going to travel, whatever it is that it is, they can play with those ideas when they're in childhood, when the risks are so low. And then they don't have to, you know, start a degree on this and then transfer to another degree and then quit college, because many, many, many actually start college and then quit. I think like the rates are so high nowadays. So it just doesn't make any sense, right?
Or you spend a lot of money to just kind of like get through it, right, which is tragedy now, because it is a big sacrifice to go to college financially.
Right. So Ben, what are like the last things that you want to say to parents who maybe are interested in some kind of alternative education for their kids and they feel like the mainstream education system is not working for them so much, but they do have, you know, those fears and those voices in their heads that don't allow them to trust this process completely?
I don't think that it takes a lot of trust. I think that the proof is in the pudding, you know? Mm. So you will, if this is what's right for you and for your child, you will see a difference and you will see it soon. It's not something where you have to kind of take it on faith for like a while. So I would say, and I speak to a lot of parents that come to me that know that something isn't right with where their children are currently, or they're just not happy. I think it's important to listen to that gut feeling, and also to be open to seeing when it is right, you know, and looking for the results. I think sometimes we can be not as receptive to just sort of seeing what's in front of us. You know, we're thinking, rationalizing, oh, well, I pay taxes, so I should use them and go to the school, or it's hard to change my routine. You know, there can be things like that. But if you're really just paying attention to what's working, what is not working, I think then the answers are going to be there in front of you and you'll know what is working and what is not working.
Yeah, I love that. And I feel like the results, you know, people think sometimes of results as something that we can quantify, you know, like a grade, like a better grade in math or a better grade in reading or whatever it is. But I feel like the results are actually that they see happier children, that they see children that are just calmer and have more well-being and are more creative, and are more self-driven, are just more energetic even. So I think that's the results that we want to be looking for. And then we know that we're going in the right direction.
Yes, I think you need that definitely as a baseline, because the learning comes from the kids. You know, you can't make someone learn. They have to want to learn. And so you need them to be receptive to that. They need to be happy and interested and having a good time. You know, it's not like it's all playtime, but they have to be receptive to learning. So they need that. And then you need, I think, learning that is compatible with childhood. You need learning that is age appropriate. You need learning that is self-paced. You need, so that they are not going too fast or too slow for them, or they're not feeling bored because there's nothing of interest to them that day, or they're not feeling anxious that they're falling behind because the rest of the class is moving on and they're not. All of these things are going to take them out of the game, take their head out of the game, and they're not going to learn or they're not going to enjoy learning. And then you've kind of lost them, you know?
Yeah.
So we're really trying to put all the pieces there, create an environment that's suited for them, and then create a style of academics and a style of learning that's compatible with how they really grow and develop.
Amazing. I just love what you're doing. And if people who are listening now want to reach out and connect with you guys, how can they find you?
They can find us at thevillageelectric.com. And we have a form on our website. And if you fill that out, I will be honored and happy to get in touch with you ASAP.
Awesome. I'll be sure to link that in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ben. It was a lovely conversation.
Oh, well, thank you. And, you know, we're still young enough to really appreciate people being interested in what we do. And we love connecting with people who are on a similar journey and who care deeply about children and how children learn and wanting to do the best for children. So it's an honor to speak with you and to keep nurturing and developing this community.
Yeah, we're on the same mission for sure. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
I enjoyed this episode so much. I just love talking to people who care about education so much and who care about our kids' future. Here are the main takeaways. Number one, parents have the power to create educational alternatives if traditional systems don't align with their values and needs. Number two, Village Electric combines elements of homeschooling and community-based learning to provide a balanced educational experience. Number three, in the Village Electric, children progress in their own pace, with a curriculum and structure tailored to their social-emotional development rather than age. Number four, the emphasis is on nurturing each child's innate curiosity and genius, with staff attuned to individual needs. Number five, children are encouraged to pursue their interests, fostering intrinsic motivation and independence. Number six, in Village Electric, a balance is struck between structured learning and freedom, allowing for exploration and self-direction. Number seven, grouping children based on social-emotional development facilitates better learning environments than age-based grouping. Number eight, learning is seen as inherent in children, and conditions such as curiosity and interest are fostered to facilitate leaps in learning. Number nine, the importance of family time and structure is emphasized. The schooling and parenting are seen as intertwined. Number 10, alternative education prioritizes individual growth over standardized benchmarks, fostering uniqueness and passion, which are valued in college applications and beyond. If you would like to learn more about this program, you're welcome to attend the virtual info session, Is Your Child a Genius?, on Thursday, March 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can sign up in their website, thevillageelectric.com. And again, if you would like to join my free online workshop, Forming an Unbreakable Bond with Our Kids, go to alternative-parenting.ck.page/bond. Thank you for being here, and I'll talk to you next time. I hope you enjoyed this episode and was inspired to make small shifts in your parenting that will support your kids to bring forth their full potential while living a life of ease and well-being. To support this show, please make sure to subscribe and rate the show. Leaving a comment can be very helpful in promoting the show on the podcast platform. If you think that this can benefit other parents, please share this podcast with them. I invite you also to follow my Instagram account, Alternative Parenting Coach, and join my private Facebook group, Alternative Parenting, where I would love to hear your thoughts about the episode, what you learned, what inspired you, or what you didn't agree with. Your feedback is extremely valuable to me, as we are all in this process together, living, learning, and evolving. Thank you again, and I'll talk to you soon.